Welcome to another episode of the Wine Scholar Guild podcast. I'm Valerie Caruso, a wine educator and podcast host, and with me is Rick Fisher, Spanish Wine Scholar Education Director. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Val. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well. I am so excited to hear all about your trip to Spain. I don't think you've even been back a week yet, but you were just in Spain learning how to be you're a certified sherry educator. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, that was actually the last part of the trip. I think I must have been in probably six different wine regions over the course of the 2 weeks. And the last 4 days finished off in Jerez de la Frontera and taking the intensive sherry educator course that the Consejo puts together. And it was absolutely fantastic.
And for those of us that aren't familiar with the sherry educator program, what did that entail and what did you learn about sherry during that process that surprised even you?
They offer this program twice a year, once in Spanish in the spring and then once in English in the fall. And it's a three-day intensive course where we visit different bodegas throughout sherry country. We meet with winemakers. We learn, we work through pairing and we do an extensive tasting. What was interesting, and you said, what surprised me? And I think like a lot of people, I've had a very similar perception about sherry, and the sheer diversity of the styles is what kind of blew me away. You know, I'm familiar with it. I've taken some basic courses on it, but we would sit down and on probably five different occasions, we would try anywhere from 5 to 15 different sherries. And so I did not have an idea of the scope of what they had to offer.
I don't think most people even realize there are 15 different sherries to be had, at least.
I think you're right. I certainly didn't at the time. And it was really fun to see the diversity. You know, at first it seems a little overwhelming because I'm not a daily sherry drinker, but, you know, I certainly gained a tremendous appreciation. And I think when you sit down in front of 15 wine glasses and you realize that you're going to start tasting wines that are at anywhere from 18%+ alcohol, it gives you a little bit of pause. But at the end of the day, it was amazing to see what's out there, from the very dry to the mid-range to the very sweet to 20 and 30 year old sherries as well.
As much as I would love to be a daily sherry drinker, it's just not possible. But let's start with a little bit of a refresher on the region, because some of us have studied it to some degree, or some of us are familiar with the basics. But beyond the basics of sherry, what do you think would be interesting for listeners to know about the region and the styles and the production of sherry?
Yeah, I think that, you know, sherry is a very, and I would say this for the vast majority of people, of wine drinkers, it's a very unknown type of a wine. And that's one of the big things, too, that they really kind of drove home with us. Sherry is a wine. It's made from a base wine, and then it's fortified. And so it is truly a wine. It is not a spirit. But one of the things that was very fascinating is that, you know, when Spain was starting to go through and create its denomination of origin system, sherry was actually the first region that was named. They named, I believe it was about 18 or 19 different wine regions, and sherry was the first one. Sherry is actually believed to have been, you know, the place where wine actually first came to the Iberian Peninsula about 3,000 years ago by the Phoenicians. And so there's a tremendous history of production there. You know, that wine at that point, you know, was typically sweet, fortified, because they needed it to be able to travel well. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way to get it to do that, was to fortify it. And the fortification actually came with the Moors, where, you know, they were kind of the ones that brought that distillation process and helped move that along. So, that, you know, just knowing that this is one of Spain's very first wine regions, and being in there and visiting these different places within the region is just fascinating. I think one of the other things that's kind of that was very fascinating for me was, we use the term sherry, and I think a lot of times we don't really know what the origin of that comes from. And so what was interesting was, when they actually created the denomination of origin, it actually has three names. It's Jerez, Sherez, Sherry. And that's the official name of the denomination of origin. Jerez being the Spanish name, Sherez being the French name, and Sherry being the English name. And this was done in because they wanted to protect the name of Sherry around the world, just like Champagne has done and, you know, and others have done as well. But in Sherry, there are 9 production areas. They're called the Zona de Producción. And there are 9 areas within there that actually can grow the grapes, which are Palomino, Pedro Jimenez, and Moscatel de Alexandria. But of those 9, only 3 of those are allowed to actually age the wine and call it sherry. And that would be Jerez de la Frontera, El Puerto de Santa María, and Sanlúcar de Barrameda. So, you know, they can grow these grapes, and a lot of wineries within the 3, they call it the Zona de Crianza, the Sherry Triangle, is what it's also known as well. They actually will have vineyards in other production areas of Andalusia and around the Sherry Triangle, but they have to age them in the Sherry Triangle to be able to be called Sherry.
And you mentioned the 3 grapes, and I remember studying fortified wines for the diploma, and I was so surprised to read that the Pedro Jimenez, the PX, as we like to call it, it's kind of one of the least grown, and that it's only used for the sweeter styles. Is that a true thing, or has that changed?
No, that is true.
It is true. Okay.
Yeah, and it's true there, and also in one of the neighboring regions where it actually is incredibly popular in Montilla Moriles, where they grow a lot of PX and they produce the sweet wines. But I have never seen a dry PX. That doesn't mean they don't exist, but at least from my studies with the Consejo, the only styles that are produced with the PX are the sweet styles, just like the Moscatel as well.
Right. And I think that's one thing we do learn. There can always be exceptions. We can learn things. But in the wine world, not too much is very definitive. It's a very dynamic field. Let's talk a little bit more about the styles. You mentioned 15, and we all know Fino Oloroso, and somewhere in the middle is Palo Cortado. And then there's Manzanilla out there and from Sanlúcar de Barrameda. Did I not say that right?
You did very well.
And so, kind of just give us a style refresher for those of us who are going 15 glasses of sherry. Do tell us more.
And I will tell you, though, like, for example, the sit down with the 15 glasses of sherry, there may have been 2 or 3 Finos in there or a couple of Manzanillas. It just they, you know, depending on how they make them and where they make them. But on the one end of the spectrum, you have the driest ones, which, you know, I think a lot of people who have tried sherry and a lot of them who don't particularly care for it, this may be one of the styles that they've tried that has kind of turned their nose to it. But you've got the Finos and the Manzanillas. And, you know, in effect, these are almost the exact same wine. The difference is where it's aged. Mm-hmm. And so for Finos, they are aged either in Jerez or in El Puerto de Santa María. But if it's aged in Sanlúcar, then it's actually called a Manzanilla. You know, for people who, the more you kind of dig into it, the more you try those 2 side by side, you can start to uncover some of the stylistic variations on it. And that's predominantly because of the location. So Sanlúcar is actually located near the coast, or actually I should say really much on the coast, where Jerez is more inland and Santa María is north of there. So Sanlúcar actually kind of creates this really interesting microclimate where they get this sea breeze and these winds that are coming off of the Atlantic called the Poniente winds. And they bring this really humid air, which kind of works its way through these huge wine cathedrals that they have where they have all of the barrels sitting. And when you taste those 2 side by side, you can definitely get more of that salinity and more of that sea air taste in those 2 styles, which I thought was very fascinating. And then as you kind of move through the spectrum, you get to, you know, Amontillados. So basically what happens here, when you're starting with the Fino or the Manzanilla, they're aged what they call oxidatively. And so they're fortified. The base wine is fortified to 15%. This allows that yeast layer called the floor to grow and to continue to eat the sugars and to survive. But sometimes what happens is that floor starts to die. And so they can actually change. They actually can refortify it up to 17, which is where they would typically fortify for an Oloroso. And then they create a new style called Amontillado. And so these tend to be a little bit darker in color. They're a little bit smoother. They don't have that real super bone dry taste like the Finas and the Manzanillas.
Okay.
Then, as I mentioned, the Olorosos, you've got the Olorosos where those actually start off. Those are only, I'm sorry, let me back up a sec. The Finas and the Manzanillas are biologically aged. They're not oxidatively aged. They're biologic because the floor is actually doing that. Yeah, exactly. So my apologies for that. The Olorosos are oxidatively aged, and those are fortified up to 17 to get started. And those, again, are darker. They have a little bit fuller, you know, mouthfeel. And then you go into this really cool style that is, I think it's a mystery for everybody. And it was for us even for the 3 days that we were there, Palo Cortado, and you mentioned it earlier. You know, winemakers, they basically, from the beginning when they're tasting the wine from these barrels, they can identify which barrel they want to make a Palo Cortado. And it's crazy. It is just absolutely crazy that they can just pick this wine right out and say, this is going to be a special barrel. We're going to make it a Palo Cortado. So, you know, what ends up happening is it's produced oxidatively, and it has kind of the nose of the Amontillados and a little bit more of the depth and the structure of the Olorosos. Then you start moving into more of the sweeter styles. You move into the cream sherries, and where, you know, I think there's a little bit of a misconception about I think the term cream on cream sherry mm-hmm. is just a misnomer. I mean, you get this picture of this milky kind of the wine sitting in a glass, and it's not. Basically, what they do is they take a dry, the Fino or the Manzanilla, and they mix it with either a Muscatel or Pedro Ximenez.
Okay.
And it's the percentages that they mix it as to whether it's a dry or a full cream sherry. And then you've got on the full right hand side of the spectrum, the sweeter wines, you've got the Muscatel and the Pedro Ximenez, where, you know, Pedro Ximenez is just, I mean, it is thick and raisiny and unctuous super sweet and incredible over vanilla ice cream. So hopefully that was enough of a kind of primer on the vast styles of sherry.
Oh, absolutely. Why do they call cream sherry? Is that something that they give you any insight on?
They didn't really go into why they use that term. You know, I think we all, I mean, I found it fascinating because I had never tried a cream sherry. And so understanding more of it and seeing the variety of styles for an individual who doesn't particularly care for the Fino style to try the dry cream where it's just slightly, you know, sweetened with Muscatel, it was actually a very good, it's very delicious. And I think it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, you talk about people that only drink red wine and you kind of work them in with the rosé a little bit and kind of work them backwards, you know, or somebody who only drinks white and you work them in a rosé to bring them into the red wine realm. It's just fascinating to be able to give those, you know, instead of saying, well, I just don't particularly care about the way that it's made. It doesn't sound like it would be interesting. Put that aside because they're fascinating. Even to the full cream sherries where you move into those sweeter styles. You know, I mean, every wine has a place for sure. So,
right. And speaking of every wine having a place for these wines is in the new Spanish Wine Scholar program. See how I did that?
And that was a nice segue.
Thank you so much. So I'm sure you're going to be covering sherry in this program, but I think what we all want to hear about is the where, the when, all the details. And you are today in this podcast going to spill the beans on the launch of the Spanish Wine Scholar program with the Wine Scholar Guild.
I will. So it is so fun to talk about this program. You know, I've been working on it for almost a year now. The first half of that was part-time, and now I've been working full-time on it, and it is so fun to see this program take shape. You know, there's so much interest and so much excitement about the Spanish Wine Scholar program that people are chomping at the bit. I get emails and texts and messages on a regular basis you know, asking me the questions that you're asking right now. So at this point, what we're looking at sometime this month, our applications are going to start going out to our program providers, the wine schools that will be teaching our program. And probably December or January, we're targeting the end of this year for completion of the manual. We're final on a number of the chapters, probably about two-thirds of the way through right now on the manual. We have the most incredible maps that you have ever seen on a program. Our map maker, Quentin Sadler from London, has just done a phenomenal job with those. You know, so we're looking at having the program, you know, the manual completed by the end of the year. And then in the spring is when we'll work on training the trainers, the, you know, getting all the webinars put together. And then we're hoping probably sometime in the late spring, early summer, for them to actually start launching that in their respective wine schools. You know, I would tell folks to, you know, continue to keep connected to the Wine Scholar Guild website. And if they're not already, you know, signed up for the newsletter, to do so, because that will continue to give timeline updates as we move forward with that. And then once the schools start teaching, in the meantime, we'll also be developing the online content for us to do, to teach it, you know, one-off for those people who don't have access to a wine school co-located near them.
That was my next question, was the online program, because I did French Wine Scholar through correspondence, and it's kind of my way to do it. I love the online program. So that was my next question.
Yeah, so I would expect that that would be, you know, we have to get through the wine schools first. So I would say sometime in the middle of the year of 2019.
Okay.
Could be sooner at this point. You know, there's so much that goes into the development of that. And, you know, fortunately, I have the tremendous expertise of Julian and Lisa, you know, who have been through this twice already for France and Italy, and are now just, you know, are pulling me along as we go through Spain. But it's fun. It's really, I mean, we look at these chapters that we've got done, and it's just crazy, Val. It's just, it's like it's my baby and I'm giving birth to this,
right?
this program.
Have you written Rioja yet?
I have. All of the new wine laws are incorporated into that chapter already, you know, with the Vinos Singulares and the Vinos de Zona, the new sparkling. And that's, you know, that's actually a really fascinating topic as well, because, you know, the more I researched on that, the more I understood. And I've been to Rioja on a couple of occasions and I've tried a lot of the sparkling wines out there, which, you know, many are phenomenal. Like Muga makes an amazing sparkling.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that, you know, there's just this question about Cava at this point, and Cava has, you know, has made some tremendous, you know, growth in creating a new higher level category. But there's just this fight back and forth about, you know, what's the perception of Cava on the market. And if, you know, because a lot of Rioja wineries are allowed to label as Cava, but they feel like that they actually want to label as DOCA Rioja because they feel like they have better name recognition than Cava.
Okay. Will the grapes be the same? I didn't read into it too much.
So the grapes will be grapes that are authorized within the wine region.
That's what I meant.
Versus grapes that are authorized within the Cava.
Okay.
The Dio Cava. So yeah, so they will, it will open the door for them to have more flexibility in creating wines, you know. And I think that this is a move that you may very well see. You know, I'm working on the Levante right now in the Valencia, the Valencian community, and there are places down there that are producing incredible sparkling wine, but they can't call it Cava. So I think you're going to see a lot of that, you know, a lot of these changes. And which, again, is one of the things that, you know, as soon as this manual will be updated on an annual basis, because things will constantly change. So,
right. How is the course divided up? I think that's my next question. How is the course divided up?
So we start with a foundation unit like we do with our other two programs. And then we'll have 9 chapters that will cover the regions of Spain. So we move basically from Galicia kind of in a clockwise circle around the country. So we'll start with chapter 2 is Green Spain, which covers 4 autonomous regions. 3 is Castile León. 4 is Rioja. 5 is the Ebro River Valley, which is Aragon and Navarra. And then there is Catalunya, then the Levante, which is Valencia and Murcia. Then we move into the center of the country with the Meseta, where we have La Mancha, Madrid, and Extremadura, then down to Andalusia, and then the islands finish it off in chapter 10.
so the styles aren't broken out. You aren't going to like have a separate chapter just on sherry, because they do make dry wines in that region as well.
Correct.
So Andalusia will have its own section. That makes sense.
Correct. It's just like we did, just like I did with Cava, you know, in Catalonia, where it will be an extensive, you know, it's fairly extensive, and the sherry section, you know, is going to be very extensive just based on what, you know, our conversation that we've just had today, but it will incorporate other, you know, because there are a number, I mean, Andalusia has probably 15 to 18 different wine regions outside of Jerez.
Oh yeah. And they have some of the best dry Muscat that I've ever had, actually. And, and I've poured that at tastings before that have fascinated people. Like, there's dry Muscat? Yes, there is.
Yep.
So speaking of sherry, next week when this podcast airs, it's going to be Sherry Week. So maybe that would be a good way to experiment with some different types of sherries by finding an event near you. Can you tell us a little bit about Sherry Week, what it is, and how people can maybe get out and taste a few sherries to pique their curiosity?
Sure. So this is the fifth year that they've done International Sherry Week. As a matter of fact, I mean, I'm going to be in New York over the weekend, and even though it doesn't start until Monday, I'm going to celebrate a little early and do a little experimenting with some sherry. And I think one of the great ways for people to do that, you know, it's always hard when you're trying to find different styles and whatnot, and, you know, you don't want to go out and buy five bottles, you know? So there's a couple of things that I would recommend. If you go onto the web and you go to www.sherry.wine/Sherry Week. That's actually the official site for the Consejo, and they have information and a link where you can actually see if there are any events that are going on near you. The other thing I would do is unfortunately, there's not going to be something in every city. I would look and see if there are any wine bars or whatnot, or even Spanish restaurants near where you live that will very likely have something that'll give you the ability to do a little tasting and maybe taste two or three different styles side by side to help understand a little bit more of what the variety they have to offer.
So if you're kind of curious about sherry, it would be kind of cool to get out in the community and find a little tasting. And of course, Rick, this is going to bring us to the last question. If you were a wine, which wine would you be and why?
This is always such a loaded question, Val.
That's why we ask it.
I know. All right. So I have to say, I think if I were going to be a wine, I would be a Garnacha.
Okay.
You know, I thought through this and I'm like, and I've always loved Garnacha. I think it's a very underrated grape. And so I think that was part of the reason for me was, you know, it's kind of in the shadows a little bit. And even though I'm by no means a wallflower, for anybody who knows me or who will get to know me, you know, I think that there's a lot that's under the surface that people don't know. And so I think that it's one of those wines and those styles that's kind of finding its voice right now. And it's coming into its own. Forever, for decades, you know, people have only looked at Garnacha as Grenache from France. And even though France is the largest, grower of Grenache, Spain is second. The grape is indigenous to Spain.
Right.
It's actually from Aragon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was kind of fun that it's indigenous to Spain, and my family's heritage is in Spain too. So that was just another connection for me with Garnacha. You know, it's a complex wine. It's got a lot of expressions. And I kind of think that, you know, that's a little bit of my personality is there's more than meets the eye, so to speak.
Very good. I think that's a great answer. Thank you for playing along with that question. All right, Rick. Listeners, you can find out more information on the Spanish Wine Scholar Program, immersion trips, and more on the website at wineschollarguild.org. Thank you so much, Rick, for talking with me today.
Thank you, Val. It was great chatting with you.